Welcome to Clearly Quaker, an ongoing series of podcasts by Salem Quarterly Meeting, part of the Religious Society of Friends. Salem Quarterly Meeting is an association of seven Southern New Jersey Quaker meetings within Philadelphia Yearly Meeting. Philip Lord, presiding clerk of the American Friends Service Committee, spoke at Haddonfield Monthly Meeting on February 19, 2017. His topic was American Friends Service Committee and the Black Freedom Movement. In his talk, he wove together the platform of the Black Lives Matter movement, the minute of the Fellowship of Friends of African Descent, and AFSC's work that coincides with and supports these efforts. Friend Lord is a member of the Pennsylvania Bar and the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. He concentrates his practice on representing community development corporations. Longtime Quaker, he is currently a member of Chestnut Hill Monthly Meeting.
I was thinking last night about what I wanted to share with you. There's so much to cover in these documents. There's so much that could be said about the American Friends Service Committee. But something that came to me, I do want to share. It's a passage from the book of Luke. I managed to find a Bible here. and it's Luke 17:20. It says, being asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them, this is Jesus, the kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, lo, here it is or there, for behold, the kingdom of God is in the midst of you. The kingdom of God is in the midst of you. When Jesus talks about the kingdom of God, I have to say, well, what is he talking about? What does he really mean when he says that? Obviously, the people who were asking these questions, the Pharisees, were saying, wow, you're talking about it all the time. Tell us when it's going to happen. And then if it happens, if you say a couple of months it's going to happen, it doesn't happen, then we know that you're not really who you say you are. And if it's way out in the future, we're going to say, well, that's not relevant to what we're doing. But Jesus turns the tables and says, okay, it's right here already. And what does that mean? Well, we talk about the beloved community. And that's what I can understand a little bit, and that's mysterious enough. But if you think of the beloved community as a community in which love rules, and if God is love, then of course we've made the connection. And the question I think for us is, how do we bear witness to this kingdom of God? How to bear witness to this beloved community? How do we see it now, even among us today? And I'd like to think about that as we explore this topic. I'd be in big trouble if I don't say the American Friends Service Committee is 100 years old this year, okay? If you didn't know that, you know it now. There's no excuse. April 19th to 23rd, we're going to be down at the Friends Center celebrating. We want to see you there. You're facing the places, they say, helping us celebrate 100 years of great spirit-led work by this organization, and also looking forward to another 100 years. And that's why I hope we have time to get some of your feedback, because I really want to know what you think about that next 100 years, and also what we've done so far, because your feedback is critical. And we're going to have, just as a plug, we're going to have Elizabeth Chenoweth, who did that book on civil actions matter, make a difference. And she's going to talk about nonviolent movements and how they've been more successful than violent movements in terms of social change. And that's going to be exciting to hear that talk. Okay, the American Friends Service Committee. Well, 100 years is a long time. We've been doing a lot of stuff. What are we doing now? We're in, the number keeps changing, and I have, there's so many AFSC people here. I know I'm going to get corrected, and that's great, because we're going to get it right one way or the other. But we're in about 35 to 40 cities, okay, 15 countries and 16 countries around the world, doing program work, maybe 79, 80 programs. We're all around the place. And a lot of times people don't know. They know about the name, but don't know what we're doing. Just to give you a snapshot, we're in China, for example. We have work in there where we're trying to help the Chinese government and the Commerce Department and others do a better job of interacting with other countries in terms of doing their development work. So they respect indigenous populations and be more cooperative with their needs. And they receive that well. And so we've been doing a good job of giving them information about that. We're in North Korea. Not many groups are in North Korea, but we're inside North Korea. We're working with farmers there. We're helping them to improve their productivity. We're helping them learn new ways to do stuff. And more importantly, in some ways, we're bringing them out. We're helping them come out and see other places, the U.S. and China, other places, and see what's been going on out there. And this exchange begins to break down barriers, as you can imagine, and start to eliminate some stereotypes. So that's really good work. We're in Africa. We're in Burundi dealing with election violence, trying to anticipate how that might happen, what we could do about it, and helping to make the transition. They have an election coming up this year, which is going to be significant. We're in South America. We're working with young people all around the world. That's one of our focuses. But we're working with young people in Guatemala and in El Salvador and in Haiti. We have these what they call local peace networks, where AFSC workers go into a community, find out what organizations are there, what communities are doing, what young people are leaders, and help them, bring them together, give them materials around peace and nonviolence, help them understand how to deal with these issues, and they go back to their communities and make a difference. And we help them and support them in that process. I was in Colombia just recently, and I was talking to some of the workers from that program, and it was startling to me because they said that the most dangerous job in Guatemala is being a bus driver, because they know bus drivers have money and they get shot right through the window and it's terrible what's going on down there. And so they want vehicles they could use to go out on their own. And obviously, this is very dangerous work that people are doing on behalf of friends all around the world. And I really appreciate it. In this country, we're working very hard as well in many different cities. We have our Freedom School Network. We're having young people learn about how to engage racism, how to engage their communities, how to make change in their communities and deal with all kinds of issues there. We're working with black and white working class folks in Virginia to help get minimum wage protections and things like that. So we have coalitions, something that you know, we don't talk about much these days lately. People working together to make social change that affects and helps everybody. And so that's happening in places that we're involved in. So that's just a snapshot. I can go on, but I think that's just an idea of a sampling of what we're doing. And it's really valuable work, and really is important. But the American Friends Service Committee was formed initially, and still is, an expression of friends, of you. And it was created by monthly and yearly meetings, especially yearly meetings, and it represents yearly meetings. And the purpose is to make sure that Quakers can do things nationally and internationally. A monthly meeting can't reach out at that level. And the idea was, let's pull together resources and information and perspective and bear witness on that kind of scope. And so, as you saw from that quote that you shared with you, it's our intent to make sure that we live up to that charge and that mission, that we, in fact, create opportunities to hear from you about what you feel our witness should be and how you feel about Quaker witness in the world. And so, if you have a chance to do that today, I'll be glad to look forward to that. But we'll find other opportunities to do that, because that's really important to our work and how we go about doing it. And the other part that's really important to our work, which we're really focused on, is trying to make sure that we're accountable to the communities that we're involved in. That, in fact, we are not just going in as outsiders, making sure that our objectives are accomplished, but making sure that also that we understand the needs and intentions and goals of the communities that we're part of, and that we're responding to them appropriately. And that's a real key part of what we try to do. So that's basically who we are. And I look forward to you being part of it, making that donation, and giving us input about what's going on. Let me say this. The American Friends Service Committee did not join the Black Lives Matter movement, okay? In case you're worried about that. You're watching TV waiting to see us on the podium. We didn't join the movement, but we did endorse the Movement for Black Lives Matter platform, because that platform was such a powerful, I'm expressing what I think was the intent of the board in that process, a powerful and rich expression of what the black people in America, especially young black people, felt was needed. And if you've been watching this movement, I don't know who hasn't, because you could be all around the world and you can see anywhere, you can see it on TV, what's going on in the U.S., you see that there was a lot of confrontation, a lot of challenging interactions, and a lot of sound bites around what was going on. But there were people who said, well, this doesn't have much depth. I mean, this is just a one issue, one trick pony, as they say. What are they really all about? They were against police brutality, but then what? And in what context, and what does it mean? So about a year ago, 60 organizations, as you saw from this, came together and decided they were going to put together a platform which would give the breadth of what they were trying to do. And it has, you saw this, you've seen the summary of it. You clicked on the link, you could see a lot more. But basically, it has some key points, but then it goes into how it's going to go about making those things possible, the kinds of challenges that those issues present, where the resources might be, how it can go forward. So it's an effort to bring an agenda that speaks on behalf of a community that is not well heard and expresses that vision that they would like to see accomplished. And what we decided as a board was, well, you know, we're not part of that movement per se, but we do work that is very similar in a lot of respects to what they're doing, trying to accomplish. And the Black Lives Matter platform does not really have a real process for getting to where it wants to go. And basically, it's more about goals. And maybe it's some about, some, you know, talk about taking money from the military budget, which we always talk about, and putting into social programs. But you know, if you take money from the military budget, you don't know where it's going to go. So it's not like that's a process. That's really an idea. But certainly, the goals that were expressed were things that the American Friends Service Committee has already been involved in. And we asked our staff to say, take a look at this, come back to us with the things that we're doing now that can support this activity, because it's very similar in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. And so that's what they were working on. They haven't finished. They haven't, you know, there's so many things going on right now, as you can imagine. We're very busy with a lot of stuff, but certainly there are some connections that are very easy to make. The first one in the material that you have is the strongest, I think, End the War on Black People, which is not just about police violence, which is something that we're working on in various cities in the United States, but also about demilitarizing the police and demilitarizing the whole mentality of how we deal with people. A big part of that is the schools. We have several schools in Seattle that through the youth activism have adopted restorative justice programs. So they no longer say, okay, you know, you talk too long in class, you're going to get arrested. They now have processes whereby young people can come together, share their understandings, deal with the issues, and come to a conclusion that makes everybody whole. And that's a shift that we're trying to get to be in more and more schools. And young people are being activists around that and leading the way about it. They're also, young people are worried about being locked up and not to mention being shot. And that's also in this section. And we're working on that as well. We're making sure that there are areas like Arizona, for example, where we're really fighting the creation of prisons. You may well know, as many do, that we have requirements that companies fill the prison cells, the prison beds, and insane things like that as part of the campaign discussion during the presidential campaign. And so we're trying to make sure that those prisons do not get built. And again, young people are playing a key role in that whole process. We, of course, prisons are an old Quaker testimony and witness, and AFSC has carried that forward. For many years, we focused on solitary confinement and mass incarceration, and we're still doing that work, and that work is certainly vital. And we're making sure that not just that people in prisons are, first of all, that fewer people go to prison. You know, overusing that has been the problem. And that while they're there, they're treated as human beings. We believe everybody has human rights, and it's critical that we have that be a reality. We go into the prisons. We have former returning citizens who go back into the prisons and help nurture and coach people who are there to help them make the transition out when they do get out, or help them be survive in that institution more safely and more productively. And so we have what's called Piece by Piece program. People go in and out, and they're helping each other make that transition. Because as you may know as well, when you come out of prison, the barriers just begin. I mean, there was one quote where someone said, I was in prison, I felt love and support, and I came out, and all I feel is hate. And so the prison on the street is really, really horrible for people who are coming out, and they can't get any assistance. They can be discriminated against in terms of jobs, in terms of healthcare and everything else, and it's just a terrible, difficult situation. People are trying to rebuild their lives after having learned their lesson and then whatever society asks them to do in terms of making a contribution. So we're working in that area especially, but you know, certainly our hearts are in the other areas in terms of building the community, making it more positive in terms of resources, allocating resources more constructively and creatively. And so on that basis, and we can discuss it as we go forward, it was real clear to us that this is an exciting moment, and we did not want it to pass and say Quakers were not involved in some way or another. But we did stop short of saying we want to join and work up with this, because obviously we have values that are our values and not everybody else's values. And it's important, and this is an important point for me, and that is we have to learn to engage in ways that put our values on the table. If we just stand back and don't get involved at all, then you know we've got our pride, and say, oh, we're righteous, whatever. But if we don't engage, people won't know what we feel. They won't be persuaded by what we do, and they won't be the kind of change we expect. So we can't just critique and stand back. We have to engage, involve people. I mean, I always think about Martin Luther King, for example, who, as from what I understand, the stories I've heard, was not nonviolent in the beginning and was carrying guns, and Bayard Rustin went down and talked to him, and Quakers sent him over to India, and we nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize. If you didn't know that, AFSC nominated King for the Nobel Peace Prize. And he made a profoundly, incredibly deep and brilliant commitment to nonviolence and to peace. And I mean, he's the greatest prophet this country's ever produced, in my opinion. And that was in part because Quakers engaged and didn't just stand back and say, those people aren't really handling this thing right. So we have to get involved, but we have to stand up for what we believe, and we have to bring that to the table. We need to talk about that. So this is Black History Month. Maybe that's why I'm talking about this stuff. I don't know. But the other piece I want to touch on, and we'll have a chance to discuss it, is the Fellowship Minute, the Fellowship of Friends of African Descent. As you saw from reading it, if you got a chance to read it, this is a 25-year-old organization. So we've been around for a while. I remember our first meeting out at was it Pendle Hill? Is it Pendle Hill? Anyway, first and second meeting was at Pendle Hill, and people were just, you know, like, oh, wow, there's other Black Quakers. This is amazing. I didn't know you existed. It was a real homecoming and a great experience. And we did that for several years. But then we realized that we need to not just enjoy the fact that we're coming together and reinforcing our commitment to Quakerism and our understanding of our own special experience within Quakerism, because it is different if you're a Black Quaker, let me tell you. That's another topic. but not just that, but also to make a statement, to actually have a voice within Quakerism and in our communities based on our experience. Because we do, in a sense, feel we combine a variety of perspectives. Everybody does that. We all have different hats that we wear in different contexts. And as Quakers, as members of people of African descent, we bring different perspectives. And if you think of Quakers as a culture, which we're trying to get past that, then of course we're bringing a different cultural perspective in some ways to Quakerism. And that's an interesting and engaging and really fruitful process of trying to blend things and see where the potential is. So several of us in Philadelphia felt, hey, look, all this stuff is happening. We're hearing about Black Lives Matter. We're hearing about state-sanctioned violence. We're hearing about the people who say yeah, the Blue Lives Matter. And we're not hearing the voices that reflect what we, as not just as Quakers and not just as friends, but as people of African descent feel is important to understand from our perspective. So we got together and decided we're going to do a statement, but not just a statement, because we got enough statements, and we're good at statements. Quakers are great at statements. But to do some action, to actually engage with our communities and get involved in ways that are going to make a difference. And before I get into the details of that, let me say this, and that's why I read the quote I did in the beginning. It's really critical that we not just say things and not do things. And this time that we're in right now, you know, what I tell people is join whatever you can. I mean, just get involved, because it's not even enough to protest, because we have to be organized to respond to the challenges that the polarization that this country is in, whatever side you're on, is facing right now. And the voices that are saying we should not be polarized are not strong enough. And we need to make our contribution to that as friends and to stand up and say, hey, look, we're not looking to figure out who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. We want to solve these problems. We want to address the problems, the systems that create this situation, and not the people that we think are behind them. Because the people change office and change position, and the problem is still there. So we don't want to address the problem. So we wanted to address the problems as Quakers of African descent. And so we came up with this concept of a peace center, very fundamental to the other concepts. And that is, it's not just a peace center so we can have a place that people know where we are and that kind of thing. We wanted a peace center because we wanted to have a presence and a witness in the Black community, okay? And we want this to be replicated other places. We want to be able to, people to say, oh, the Quakers are over there, and this is what they do. So we want to go to this peace center and worship and also to do programs around nonviolence, around cultural events. We want to and make sure people come together in ways that are reflect our values, reflect our traditions, but also that they can enjoy and learn and grow from. And one key part of that is the Freedom School concept, which you'll hear over and over again in different ways. And we're really working on having a Freedom School grow out of the Peace Center. And so that Freedom School would be a chance for people, young people in North Philadelphia, to get involved in activism, to understand it, and understand the nonviolent dimensions of that, and the peace dimensions of that, and the values that we think are so important. So we're looking forward to that work. We're looking at several places. We got some places that we have our heart is set on. We'll see if it happens. But we're looking forward to developing that part of the work. But the other part of the work that we're working on is the police violence issue. Some of us said, you know, we don't need guns in our community at all. I mean, it's really tragic that people can get guns so easily. Young people can get guns. Anyone can get guns in our communities. I'm surprised that we don't have more people dying given the proliferation of weapons in the community. So we're saying we want the police to join this. We want some police officers. This is our vision. And, you know, people say, oh, that's too naive or too optimistic. But those things happen all the time. Optimistic, naive things happen every day, believe me. But we want police officers to have a special force that's not armed, that goes into communities, engages the community around issues without that potential for violence lurking in the background every time they say something or do something, and begin to model that. But also, of course, we want our communities to be disarmed. And we want to make sure that there aren't guns present in our community. And so we're looking forward to working on those issues, having people weigh in on those issues. Guns don't make us safer. Violence doesn't make us safer. Those are some of the key things that the minute is setting forth. I want to just read a line to you from the minute that I think has caught a lot of attention for very good reason. And a friend, Aisha, mentioned something related to this morning. In the third paragraph, it says, the problems of racism, militarism, and violence that we face are rooted in a deeper, less recognized sicknesses of materialism and greed. There was a typo in there. Anyway, there was a unity among those of us who gathered that materialism and greed was the foundation of a lot of what was going on that was wrong in our world today, and especially in our communities. And it's not just the greed of the people who are oppressing Black folks and want to exploit them and not pay different wages and not provide for education and healthcare, but also our own communities, a sense of, well, the more money you have, the better. And as long as we have these values that extol wealth and belittle moderation, and then we're not going to have a society in which human rights become a priority over greed. It's that simple. And so we're going to have to make sure we address that in every context. And that's why it's a good example of things that we tend to think it's one community or another, but we're all in this together, and we're all suffering from the same kinds of illnesses, different dimensions, different degrees, certainly, but the nature of it is something that we all have to address and address together. So that line has resonated with a lot of people because that's not in the dominant discourse, the public discourse right now. You don't hear about, as often as you should, about greed being a factor in this whole process. And so we're hopeful that becomes more common. So these are just some examples of, and I've mentioned them along the way, of ways in which we as friends bring something very different to the discourse. And if we don't raise our voices, it won't be heard. And so what I want to do is not just share these things with you, but also encourage you to do whatever you can, no matter how small it is, engage any way you can. Our whole process, and this is so important to me, but again, it's one of those mysteries I don't fully understand, walking cheerfully over the world and answering that of God and everyone. I mean, that's our process. That's how we do social change. Matter of fact, I would say that we really aren't about social change so much as spiritual witness. That even though, and FSC is really clear about this, our programs have to be well-constructed, effective, well-organized. We have to account to our funders what we're doing. But the bottom and the top, the motivation for what we're doing in a spirit-led context is to bear witness to what the Spirit is showing us. And we can't find that out sitting in this room by ourselves. Okay, that's part of the process. That's not enough. We have to engage, because answering that of God is how we hear what God is doing in other people's lives and react to that and come up with a coherent and unified whole. So I look forward to working with you, hearing about what you think is important, helping us to fine-tune this stuff so we can do a better job on it, but most importantly, to joining you in this effort, in this struggle, to bear witness to what the Spirit of God is telling us we need to do in the world today. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clearly Quaker. We hope you have found this podcast thought-provoking. If you have questions or comments, or would like to learn more about South Jersey Quakers, reach us at salemquarter.net.